Welcome to the Time Blaster Toycast.
You can download this podcast on all major streaming platforms, including Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a review. On each episode, we will select a random review for a very special giveaway. To stay up to date with us, please make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at Time Blaster Toys, also at The Retro KO. We also want to hear from you. Ask us a question on Twitter or Instagram using the hashtag AskTimeBlasterPod, and we will try our best to answer as many as we can on the show.
The following podcast is scheduled for nostalgia with a 60-minute time limit. Introducing first today's topic. 1994 was a year of history. It started with a NAFTA agreement being signed and ended with the release of Netscape Navigator. In between, we have historical moments with President Clinton, Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding, O.J. Simpson, Nelson Mandela, George Foreman, Ronald Reagan, and so many more popular names. Plus, we had the return of Woodstocks, two major sports leagues going on strikes, the birth of Justin Bieber, Giannis Antetokounmpo, I butchered that name, my apologies, folks, Bad Bunny, and countless other world-changing events and people. But today, it weighs in with nine topics unrelated to all of the above. Nine topics that were important to us as children in 1994. We bring to you our 1994 memories. And now for your hosts, they're weighing in today with the stress of fatherhood and fanfare of figures with actions, born a decade prior and in their prime time toy playing years here, they are the reigning, defending Toy Cast Tag Team Champions of the World, at the Retro KO Joe, at Time Blaster Toys Keith, together known as the Time Blaster Toy Cast.
Man, I feel like I have the weight of the world on my shoulders after that intro.
I think we need to go from tag team to trios.
Oh, trios.
We need the trios titles.
Yeah, you know, that is relevant in modern day pro wrestling.
Give me all the gold.
Yeah, 1994 memories. But hey, before we start, guys, what's new, huh? We got a review to read,
man.
This week, huh?
Stool's in my way.
Joe's standing for this. He's excited.
Okay, we're getting pumped for this. All right, yeah, so the review is in. And this review is from N. Cargill. And it reads, "A Step into Nostalgia. Such an awesome podcast. I have enjoyed listening to each episode. It has taken me down memory lane, and I love it. Keep up the good work. Also, the intro is awesome."
That's an awesome review. We appreciate it. N. Cargill, so like we've said in the past, we read your review. We appreciate your review. So send us a message on Instagram, Facebook. Let us know who you are, where you live, and we will send you some goodies.
Yes, please do. We haven't really sent one out. No one's really hit us up.
I need to send, and okay. I apologize. I'm slacking. I want to get a few together and then send them all at the same time.
Yeah, so hit us up, please.
Come get your goodies. 1994, yeah, after looking it up, man, like what a monumental year. I just did like 2 minutes of just what happened in 1994 and the things that happened in 94 I remember so vividly.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 10 for the first half of 94 and turned 11 in May. Mm-hmm. So I know, Keith, you were what, 11 and 12?
Yeah, 12 for most of the year.
Yeah, that's true for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were the right age to like really have your memory cemented.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was like the cross-section of toys and movies and sports and like all these big things. And
music, pop culture in general. Like that's where our brains were shaped. 94, such a monumental year. Joe, you were what, 10?
I was 10. Turned 10 right in January.
So, yeah, all in 94. So, yeah, it's going to be a what formed our teen years.
Yeah.
It's like the end of your single-digit years and bringing on those double digits for all of us. And this is our memories for it. So we've got the turbo spinner returning for this episode, right? The totally unknown roulette bot option spinner is what we're going to call it, the turbo, for future episodes. But Joe has got this thing dialed up, and we each brought three topics to the table, much like we did a couple weeks ago. And
let's do it. Let's spin that wheel.
It's locked and loaded. Are we ready?
We are, yes. But give Turbo an old spin.
All right, I will do the honors here. We are spinning Turbo.
What's it going to be, guys? 1994. What a year.
Oh! Our first topic
is sports games.
We're talking video games,
sports,
right?
Sports video yes. games, yes.
Okay, sports. There's a lot of them.
There
for
was
sure.
a ton of them. So yeah, like the thing with EA Sport releases, so they would have came out for so like for example, NHL 94 came out in fall of 93.
Yep.
NHL 95 comes out in fall of 94. So the NHL games I played a ton of in 94.
So 94, you would have been playing 94 the first half of the year,
yes.
95 the second half.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Got it.
Absolutely. Yeah, 95 is actually the first hockey game I didn't get for, like, Christmas.
Oh.
So, like, NHL hockey, NHL 90, NHL PA 93, and then NHL 94, all got those for Christmas. But NHL 95, I got, like, saved money up for it and got it, like, in September, October of 94.
Couldn't wait.
Dude.
My favorite video game of probably of all time still holds up is NHL 95. I know we mentioned that in the Sega Genesis episode.
Mm-hmm.
But 94 is like the iconic game that people associate with hockey games.
Yep.
Everyone goes back to 94. It's the first game where you had the teams and players. So like NHL hockey was just the teams and then like each guy's identified by a number.
Yeah.
NHL 93 was just the players and it was just like the city. So instead of it being the Detroit Red Wings, it was just Detroit.
Oh.
Or Long Island instead of the New York Islanders.
I never noticed that.
So NHL 94 comes to the table with the first time where the NHLPA and the NHL League get on the same page.
Okay.
And they bust out a video game. The same thing had to happen, I think, a year prior with Madden for football. And what was it? NBA Live 95, major basketball game, also came out in 94. That would have been the fall of 94. So I'm sure Keith and Joe, you guys probably were NBA Live guys.
Oh, absolutely.
Is NBA Live the game where the camera was like at that weird angle? Like
I
kind of
so.
Like from the corner of the. Okay,
yeah.
Yep. I played a lot of that game.
Yeah.
And then NBA Jam had a nice run in 94 as well.
Dude.
That's what I was playing.
Dude, I was playing Jam probably every day.
Being that P-Funk or whatever. George Clinton is in the game.
Hell yeah.
Bill Clinton. Isn't Bill Clinton in the game too?
I feel like he is.
Yeah. The
unlockable
President
characters in NBA Jam, especially the arcade version, is insane.
Lots of quarters in NBA Jam.
And then other sports games that I were playing was Joe Montana Football came out in 94. There was the first college football game, which was, I think it was like Sega's division of making sports games. They weren't EA because EA had Madden and then they had like NCAA football. But there was like, I think it was just called College Football USA or maybe Bill Walsh's College Football might have been EA also. But Sega's division had a college football game. They had Joe Montana Football. And those were fun to play, too. I can always think of the commentary for Joe Montana Football. If you're playing and it was a rain game, you would have dead silence with the announcer, and they'd just go, "It's beginning to rain." And you'd be 5 minutes deep into a game, and then you would just hear that, and you'd be like, "Oh, I forgot there was commentary in this game." And that was the first sports game that I remember having like commentary, and it was so bad and so off. So easy to return kicks for touchdowns in that game. Every punt and kickoff, you just return it for a TD. And the announcer would, like, you'd catch it and be like, "It's a punt. Return. Touchdown." It was just like, that's how the commentary was. But no game had commentary before that.
Yeah.
So, like,
it was still working it out.
Absolutely. Like, they could kind of call the play-by-play, but it was so bad. And then, you know, years later. I mean, I can't imagine a sports games nowadays without the commentary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's such a major part of it.
But aside from that, what do you guys have any other sports games or even a little bit off the wall from sports video games playing in 94?
Man, you covered the gamut for
me,
honestly.
Yeah, I was
going to
say
NHL 94 was
huge.
NBA Jam was huge. No, that's probably it. I mean, in the realm of sports games. What year did a Mutant League Football come out?
Oh, man.
Mutant League Football, I think, was
92, 93.
Mutant League Football was, I think, the year before. There was two Mutant League Footballs, and then there was Mutant League Hockey.
Those games were sweet.
Those were a lot of fun.
Those were cool.
Yeah. And I think it was the Mutant League Hockey one.
I've never played the hockey
they
one.
They did a good job with the names. Instead of, like, Wayne Gretzky, it was, like, Zitsky. And like
that's awesome.
Nicholas Lidstrom was Zitstrom. And then Zit was just
they
anything.
Like
Yeah, I remember Zit being there a couple times, and then there was a player for the Vancouver Canucks, Enrique Lume, and he was like Luminous something and another. I was like, oh my god, like that's what it was. It was like Jerk Luminous was his name. And I was like, that's Enrique Lume, like what a name, Jerk Luminous. And I love the Mutant League games. I think Mutant League Hockey was a couple years later. Mutant League Football though, I think, was before 94.
Nice.
And then another video game, I don't know if it falls in the sports world, but extreme sports were really taking off. And the Road Rash games were before this, because I looked them up and was hoping, but it was a game called Skitchin.
And okay, it was here's like, your opportunity to talk about Skitchin.
So Skitchin was like, you know, a skateboarding game where you grabbed onto cars as they drove, but it was like a racing game, so kind of sports related. Mm-hmm. So you're racing other people skitching, and you're going through this, like, this city, and you're just grabbing on the back of cars, and you're on your skateboard or your rollerblades. You had the option on which character you got
game
to be.
Sounds fun, but yeah. I do not remember ever.
I don't
playing
remember
Skitchin.
It.
It was one of those games I rented from the video store.
Yeah.
And then was addicted, and I think I got it for my birthday.
That's
so
cool.
All in 94, I was playing Skitchin that summer. And the other, but I think that's it as far as sports games. It's hard to even classify that one into a sports game. But
we'll allow it.
Yeah.
Nice little list of sports games.
It's a race. It's a race. It's a racing game. So.
All right. Nice little list of sports games. So are we ready to go back to Turbo? Give it an old spin?
I think so.
All right. Let's do it.
Spin that wheel.
Let's spin Turbo one more time. Spin that
How
wheel.
How are we going to follow sports games?
We are following sports games with something we all know pretty well, I'm going to say.
What's that?
King of the Ring 1994.
I was hoping this was what was next, because especially when Joe was talking to, or when Dave was talking about Joe Montana football and the awful commentary.
Here we go.
Art Donovan, baby.
Art Donovan. So the reason I want to talk about King of the Ring 1994 is because of Owen Hart, but you can't talk about King of the Ring 94 without talking about is Art Donovan a Hall of Famer? Was he a Hall of Fame football player?
I don't know if he was. I think he's in the Baltimore Sports like Hall of Fame, but I don't think he's in the NFL Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so the King of the Rings in Baltimore, mm-hmm. Art Donovan's a former football player from, what, the 60s or 70s?
So,
this guy's super old. So Vince allows him to commentate on the show, and Art Donovan knows absolutely nothing about anything about professional wrestling. Want some of the worst commentary of all time.
How much does this guy weigh?
Yeah, how much does this guy weigh? He says about every 30 seconds. So just awful. You know, wrestling fans can go back and watch the show and just laugh at how bad the commentary is. But, you know, the main reason I wanted to talk about King of the Ring 94 is because our guy, Owen Hart, right? It's like his coming out. I mean, I guess you could say WrestleMania 10 beating Bret in the opening match is you know, maybe one of... biggest moment of his career. But
absolutely.
King of the Ring is what cements him in that like upper echelon of wrestlers, right? Like this is going to allow him to challenge Bret for the world title at SummerSlam that same year. And I love King of the Ring 94 just for like the booking of Owen's story throughout the show.
Yeah.
You know, Anvil comes back on that pay-per-view.
Yes,
remember this?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
so
he's
Bret's
in the corner.
Wrestling Diesel
Amazing
for the world title, kind of like in the middle of the card.
Yep.
Yep.
And, you know, HBK's out there with Diesel, so who's got Bret's back? Anvil comes back. You haven't seen him in a couple years.
Right.
He took the PJ pants off.
Finally.
Put the old pink and black back on. And he's there with Bret. What's the finish of that match? He ends up causing a disqualification.
Yeah. So Diesel hits Bret. He lays Bret out. And then Bret, like he's got him laid out. He's going for the jackknife. Bret counters, gets him in, like, the worst sharpshooter you'll ever see, because he doesn't have the leg in between. And he like, did it from, like, a tripping Boston Crab-type position. Diesel gets to the ropes and then gets out of the ring when Bret relinquishes the hold. Anvil's outside the ring, standing by Diesel, talking a little bit of trash. He goes to walk away from Diesel. Diesel posts him.
Or Anvil posts him.
Diesel posts Anvil.
That's
and
when
then Sean comes in the ring. The ref's distracted by Diesel hitting Anvil. Mm-hmm. Blasts Bret with the belt. Yep. Diesel comes in. 1, 2. Bret with the big kick.
Yep.
And then Diesel's like, all right, jackknife time. Sets Bret up for the jackknife. Anvil comes back in to get his redemption on Diesel. Clotheslines him. There's your DQ.
Yep.
Oh, that's even better than I thought.
Oh, it was so good. And the crowd was so hot for it.
Well, yeah, and because the way they're laying it out, you don't know Anvil's intentions because Diesel hits him first.
Absolutely.
So Anvil's out there. You think he's there to help Bret.
Mm-hmm.
He ends up causing a DQ, but, you know, he's just getting revenge on Diesel.
Right.
You don't realize till an hour later in the show when he comes out with Owen. He helps Owen beat Razor Ramon to win King of the Ring. Then he's out there giving him the cape and the crown.
Yep.
And you realize, oh, man, Anvil is Owen's heavy going forward. He's going
to,
you know,
just loyal to the
have
family.
His back.
Right.
It's great.
That's
awesome storytelling. Awesome pay-per-view. Owen Hart versus 1-2-3 Kid in the second round.
What a match.
Is literally 3.5 minutes. Just banger, dude.
I was going to say, it's the best four-minute match I've ever seen.
It's
unbelievable.
If you watch it, you're like, how is this 1994?
Yeah.
How did I watch this on pay-per-view when I was 12? It's crazy. It's like Owen's coming to the ring. 1-2-3 Kid dives, suicide dive through the middle rope, and then just 3 minutes, foot on the gas.
Right.
Insane match. Awesome pay-per-view. Only show Owen ever wore that all pink boy. Remember that? Always wanted a figure of that. Dude. Never came out. But yeah, man, King of the Ring 94. Any other memories about the show? I mean, there were other matches.
So
but
the reason that you have the tournament, sorry, Josh.
No, go ahead.
But the but with Brett and Diesel for the world, the WWF World Heavyweight Championship, that match goes in the middle of the card because the main event of the show, hype, two wrestling legend names, major hype. You get Hot Rod, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Hollywood star, household name, taking on the King of the South, Jerry the King Lawler, at King of the Ring 94. And you get a lot of hype here. You got two huge stars in the main event, but like it was a flat match. Probably the wrong town for it. Baltimore is a pretty rabid fan base, but just Jerry Lawler and Piper,
Piper
for
came
some
back
reason.
Specifically for that match, right?
Yeah,
like, he was not around in 94 much at all. Like,
no. Yeah. It was, I think Piper was a draw. They were looking to I think the ticket sales were low.
With the finish of Diesel and Brett, you need Owen going over in the tournament, need something at the end of the show to send people home happy. So, I mean, that's kind of where that match gets slotted in.
Lawler being a big villain and Piper is your babyface hero. But that was your actual main event of the show. Not a King of the Ring match. Not the heavyweight championship match. There was a tag title match on the show, too.
I know it. It's the Head Shrinkers versus Yokozuna and Crush. Wild. I don't even remember the finish of that match. Clearly, Yokozuna and Crush didn't win, right?
What even opened that show? Was it Razor?
Razor and Bam Bam.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's what I was trying to remember.
Yeah, awesome pay-per-view to go back and watch. If all you're doing is watching what Owen does, he beats Tatanka, he beats 1-2-3 Kid, he beats Razor. Awesome stuff.
Not as good as King of the Ring 93 tournament, but good. Yeah, Owen's three matches, like you said, Razor, Kid, and Tatanka. Razor had Bam Bam.
Jeff Jarrett?
I thought 1-2-3 Kid beat
Jarrett
Jeff Jarrett.
Oh, he did, yeah.
And then who the heck did Razor have in the second round? Yeah, Irwin beat Mabel. So yeah, so Razor beats Bam Bam. He beats IRS, and then he's got Owen in the final. IRS beats Mabel. Yeah. 1-2-3 Kid beats Jeff Jarrett. Owen beats Tatanka. Then we kind of taught the whole tourney. But yeah, no, I love great pay-per-view. That Summer 94, King of the Ring 94 sets up SummerSlam 94, which is an incredible show.
Yeah, great pay-per-view. And to cap it off, how much does this guy weigh?
I've got an Art Donovan fact.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So he played in the 1950s.
Wow.
However, I don't know if this had anything to do with him getting in WWF in King of the Ring 94, but he was on an episode of The Adventures of Pete and Pete.
Oh man. My boy Pete.
Episode called Space Geeks and Johnny Unitas.
Wow. Art Donovan was like the king in
1994. In 1994. So, yeah, he played with Johnny Unitas for the Baltimore Colts back
in the
50s.
You were on Pete and Pete. You made it.
Maybe that was the tie-in. They're like somebody's kid, Shane.
Yeah.
Oh, this guy was just on Pete and Pete. He's so cool.
Right. Let's book him, Dad.
Oh, man. Good stuff. All right. Let's get back to that wheel.
All right.
Got seven left.
Turbo spinner.
Here we
Locked
go.
And loaded.
Spin that wheel, as Joe would say.
Dude, what a song. Oh, man, another heavy hitter right here. The Hulkster, WCW debut.
Oh, wrestling heavy at the top here.
Yeah, we're getting them back-to-back here.
So, yeah, I mean, was it February of 94?
Yes, sir.
Thunder in Paradise is airing on TNT.
What a show. I can hear that theme song in my head right now. What a show.
And then you all of a sudden, like, there was never a tie-in, really, with Thunder in Paradise and WCW programming until... Yeah. Mean Gene Okerlund shows up in WCW, and then they start doing the cross-promotional stuff with Thunder in Paradise. Mean Gene interviews Hogan on set like two or three times, but he is not a WCW contracted wrestler. He's just Hulk Hogan from the wrestling world, and they're promoting Thunder in Paradise. And then I just know it was around Memorial Day, because my birthday is around Memorial Day every year, and there was an episode of WCW Saturday Night where Hogan rips up the Thunder in Paradise contract, saying he's done with the show and he's returning to wrestling. And it was like a week or two later, they have the big Disney parade.
Oh, yep. The parade, baby.
The big Disney parade where Hogan signs with WCW. Was that on WCW Worldwide or Saturday night?
I don't remember the exact show, but I remember the parade. I mean, it was a big deal, honestly. In WCW's eyes, it deserved a parade.
Absolutely.
Because this is what was taking them from like Southern regional, not a huge presence in the Northeast or in the West. And you get Hogan on board.
Dude.
And then once Hogan's on board, here comes all the buddies, right? Like, the whole show is just, you know,
yeah, by
88 WWF at its best, like within literally 1 month.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The summer of 94, like, I mean, Hogan's first match is against Flair. Bash the Beach is the dream match. I think Shaq is involved, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Like, it's just this huge... I think it was show. Was that the Bash the Beach on the beach with the that wasn't the cage match, was it? Hogan and Flair. Was that a cage match on the beach?
I don't think. Not their first match, right?
No, it wasn't. I think that was the next year. I think that was the next year. I think that was 95. Nonetheless, Hogan wins the belt in his first match.
Of course.
Yep.
Hulkamania is running wild. And then by Starrcade, WWE's monumental event at the end of every year in December, speaking of one of his boys, he wrestles Brutus Beefcake.
I know.
Who's, what is he, the Zodiac at the time?
He's the Zodiac, yeah.
And it's just like you said, all of his friends just scattered about. It doesn't even look like the same WCW.
No, I mean, within 2 months of Hogan's arrival, you got Duggan, you got the Nasty Boys, Honky Tonk Band's in there for a cup of coffee, Brutus, Earthquake is Shark or whatever.
Shark, yeah.
I mean, it's just the up and down the whole show, man.
Barbarian.
It's just, and it's wild. But, yeah, I mean, 1994, WCW, you got Hogan's arrival. We got to talk about the toys at least for a minute.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Because, you know, prior to Hogan's arrival, there was a, what, 2-3 year gap where there were no WCW toys. The Galoobs came out in 1990.
Yep.
There's nothing up until that point. So then old San Francisco Toymakers comes in. And, I mean, we've been calling them LJN ripoffs.
That's very, what they are. Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty similar, right? They're
very
like
similar.
That same scale, mm-hmm. all not as soft as an LJN, kind of harder.
Yeah, definitely harder.
You know, just in iconic poses, and you got Hogan. What other San Francisco toy maker figures were there in that first run? Taskmaster. There's a Flair.
Yeah, there's Sullivan, Flair.
Nasty Boys. Harley had figures. Sting. I had a ton of those toys.
Yeah,
tons.
Definitely had the Hogan. Had Sting, Johnny B. Bad.
Oh, yeah, Johnny B. Bad.
Bad.
In the first set. Yeah. Ready to do like a...
I don't
double
know.
D-
double,
D-
ba- D- double, D- double Bushwhacker battering ram.
Yeah.
There you go. That's it.
Johnny B. Bad, good pull on that. But yeah, 95 or 94, Hogan debuted in WCW. It was huge for the rest. As a kid, you remember the parade. Like, that's one of those wrestling memories of 94, that summer of 94. I vividly remember everything in wrestling, but it's that muddy water of early 94 where it all kind of blends together. What's 93, what's 94? But that summer, Hogan, King of the Ring, like, what a summer.
Yeah, well, so 94 Starrcade, I was just watching it pretty recently, and one of the biggest selling points is Macho Man is showing up.
Yeah.
And he's going to tell you by the end of the night, is he there to be Hogan's buddy or to be Hogan's opponent? And the whole pay-per-view is built up to, at the end of the show, Macho's going to tell you what side he's on.
Right.
And, you know, so yeah, by the end of 94, WCW has Mach and Hogan at the top of the card. WWF, you know, they're...
What did they have?
Yeah, it's wild to think. Like
Piper and Lawler.
Yeah, wild to think.
Which
so.
Was, I mean, honestly, looking back at it, after we just talked about it, Piper could have been the counter to Hogan.
Yeah.
Why Hogan signing with WCW? Let's bring Roddy Piper back.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could've
Timeline
worked.
Checks out.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right. Is that enough 1994 wrestling talk, guys?
I mean, I could talk wrestling the whole show, but I mean, you know.
You got any Hogan memories from that, Joe?
I mean, we pretty much covered it. The parade, mostly.
Yeah.
Vivid. All right. Let's spin this wheel. Let's see if we can change pace here a little bit.
What's it going
to
be?
Oh, man. Are you ready for this one?
Maybe.
Mortal Kombat G.I. Joes.
Okay. We can talk about this.
We get a toy here.
Yeah, finally a toy on our
Dude,
toy cast.
Welcome to the toy cast.
So, obviously, I picked this because, you know, I've said multiple times, if we did a G.I. Joe episode, I wouldn't have much to say. But I could talk about
Mortal
Kombat G.I. Joe.
Absolutely.
And honestly, the funniest thing about Mortal Kombat G.I. Joes is that technically, they're not G.I. Joes at all.
No, not at
the
all.
Street Fighter figures are G.I. Joes. You know, they're on G.I. Joe card back.
They are branded G.I. Joe.
Yep, are branded. But the Mortal Kombat, not at all. No mention of G.I. Joe. But they were made by Hasbro in 1994, and they used very similar. A lot of them are just straight up repaints.
Straight up repaints.
Yeah, all the Mortal Kombat ninjas, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Reptile,
yes.
Smoke, they're all just Storm Shadow
they are.
With different paint,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So, yeah, you got the four of them. You have Shang Tsung. There's Goro, Johnny
Cage.
Dude,
the Goro was sweet.
Yep, Kano got a figure. Sonya Blade got a figure. I think there ended up being 11 figures in that first set.
Yeah, that sounds right.
A year later, they repaint a bunch of them and turn them into, like, the movie versions of the figures. But, yeah, you know, for me, I never really bought G.I. Joe figures as a kid at all. But when those Mortal Kombat ones came out, I definitely got my hands on a few. And, you know, finally getting your hands on a G.I. Joe and seeing like how articulated it is and how poseable and how much stuff you could do, I was like, man, if I could get some wrestling figures like this,
dude,
you could do everything, right?
Yeah, it's
crazy.
That's why I loved playing with G.I. Joes and wrestling with them. Like, they always had wrestling matches with them. Yeah, the Mortal Kombat guys came out, and something about the Mortal Kombat ones, they felt cheaper than like your traditional, you know, like my old school G.I. Joes. I don't know if it was like a different plastic. Or maybe the shoulder joints. Mm-hmm. Something felt off comparing them. I mean, you could play with them with the G.I. Joes, but they weren't as...
It's probably just the lack of deco on those figures.
There was a... Yeah. It was like a stark contrast, right?
There
was
G.I. Joes, they... Way kind, less paint
They kind of spared
like
no expense on tricking these guys out and making them look good.
Yep.
And yeah, not the same for the Mortal Kombat guys.
But yeah, you could do all the... Every fight you could do in the video game, you could do with the G.I. Joe style Mortal Kombat figures, which is, I'm sure, why Street Fighter and G.I. Joe and Mortal Kombat, or I'm sorry, Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat hooked up with Hasbro to go in the G.I. Joe vein, as opposed to what the WWF Hasbros were doing at the same time, where a lot harder to play with.
I just think it's wild that within a one-year span, Hasbro was making G.I. Joe branded Street Fighter figures, and then a year later, Mortal Kombat. It's crazy that even happened. You know, so these figures are identical scale. Like, they fit in the same unit. It's just so cool because as a kid, you'd always, you know, what would happen if Sub-Zero got faced Blanka one-on-one? What would happen?
What a fight.
You know, you got the electrifying Blanka. You got the ice-throwing Sub-Zero.
Yeah.
You can't figure it out in a video game, but if you had these toys,
if you had these toys,
you could do it, man, and it made total sense, and they fit perfect together. And there's been many times I've thought of, I'm like, man, do I go back and buy these Street Fighter figures? Because then obviously if I bought those, then I need the Mortal Kombat figures. I've had some of them recently, even loose. The Mortal Kombat ones are pretty expensive.
Yeah,
you know, and to get them complete, like. Although I don't even know if I'd want them complete because the weapons are insane. They're huge. They're like as big as they are.
Yeah, they don't really go
with
them.
And they don't go with the characters at all.
No, they're just G.I. Joe cast-off weapons.
Yeah. Yep. Leftovers.
The thing with you mentioned the ninjas and being repainted. So, like, I remember my first two that I got was Smoke and Raiden. For some reason, those were the first two I had.
Raiden's cool with the hat.
So,
very cool.
So I ended up, because I still had a ton of my G.I. Joe, so when I would play with these, this was like towards the end of me actually playing with toys, but it's like I remember Smoke and Raiden joining up with the Storm Shadow, like, and the G.I. Joe, like Jinx and Snake Eyes, and sort of, they ended up having like their own little faction.
That's cool.
Of like, so like they were like kind of almost like a NWO book type of invasion. As I got the Mortal Kombat guys, most of them started joining in with that group and taking over and kicking all of
Were they heels?
Of course, yeah. And they've taken out all the Joes, all the baby face Joes.
That's
and, like,
cool.
My G.I. Joe figure fed back in the day.
It's crazy that Smoke got a figure.
It is.
But it makes sense just because all we got to do is paint this guy gray.
Yeah.
Dude, and they were so smart with the ninjas. What color can we make a ninja now?
Yeah, I don't know if I ever had Reptile. I know I had Sub-Zero, Scorpion, and Smoke. I don't think I ever had Reptile.
He's
as
cool because of green, pops.
Yeah, I feel like it was just the hardest to get. Oh, kids like
the
green.
Liu Kang figure's nuts, man. Looks like Razor Ramon.
It does.
He's got the little curly. Liu Kang looks absolutely nothing like he does in the video game.
It's a leftover head they had.
It's
in the
not
factory.
His head. No, it's awful. Then you get to the movie Liu Kang. He has on like purple pants. You're just like, what is this?
I don't know what they were doing.
Yeah,
probably leftover Ninja Force parts.
Yeah, I don't think I ever had the Liu Kang or Johnny Cage. All the ones I had could mix in with my G.I. Joes. Like, Sonya was able to go and join. She was, like, the one that I think joined the Joes. Like, her lady.
She fits in pretty well with her color scheme.
Well, yeah, she's got that army green on, too.
And Kano definitely was on the villain side.
Kano definitely could be.
I think Sonya was my only babyface Joe. I think the others.
There were two versions of Johnny Cage because he came in the two-pack with Goro. Yeah. That was the only way you'd get Goro was buying the two-pack.
Yeah, I never had Goro.
Yeah, so there's like that traditional Johnny Cage in the biker shorts about to do the splits and punch you in the nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like the long tights version.
I like the long tights version.
Yeah, I think the long tights is the two-pack.
Goro was the coolest, in my opinion, with the forearms.
Oh, that figure's insane. Like, and that figure's pricey.
Very
man.
Pricey.
I've never seen it.
Oh, man.
I never had it. I've never seen it. So
I have one. I'll show you.
Oh,
you got to hold this bad boy.
Because I got to see how like they did the forearms.
Groundbreaking, man. I mean.
Oh, here we are.
I have one. I'm going to show Dave it right now.
We are live looking at Goro right
here. Time Blaster Toys in Westland, Michigan.
See, it's good to do your podcast inside a toy store. When
absolutely.
You're talking about toys.
And the other nice thing
look at this
about
thing,
look
Dave.
At him.
Oh my God,
dude, he's sick.
Oh, wow.
And then here's the Johnny Cage that comes with Goro. So he's the one with the the long tights. That's like Mortal Kombat 2 attire, basically.
This Johnny Cage is sweet.
And then his single pack would be the Mortal Kombat 1 attire. Yeah.
But, I mean, the Goro is just amazing.
Yeah, that Goro's sick. Even a lot of times you'll find him with his...
ponytail missing?
His ponytail gone because it kind of pull it out.
So this one's really clean that we're looking at right here.
So big. Yeah.
Yeah. All the budget went into Goro.
It did.
You know what I mean? That's all original. So they're like,
this is half the budget
here. We spent all the money on Goro. Let's just repaint all these other dudes.
Yeah, I like it. Got the yin yang on the belt buckle.
But yeah, really cool toys for the time, right? Like 1994. I know if I'm in Toys R Us walking down the toy aisle, normally it's a beeline for wrestling.
Yeah.
I ain't even looking at Joe's, but when these were out and the Street Fighter were out, I'd turn around and look at the pegs.
I'm pretty sure I brought it up in our Kmart episode because I brought up that I got Scorpion. My buddy's mom let me pick out a toy, and that's who I got.
Yeah.
Yeah, these just Johnny Cage here fits him. He'd be perfect fitting with the Joes. I never had these two.
He looks like a Joe.
Yeah, they're sweet.
He's got a sigh in his little sling right there. I mean, come on.
Molded to his body.
Dude, for real. He's ready. He's strapped. Why would you wear all those weapons and no shirt? You're really asking to get pricked or something, you know? Poor guy.
In Time Blast Toys was just celebrated its 1 year anniversary.
Oh, happy 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, I know. Celebrated by riding roller coasters.
Dude, time flies, right?
Yeah, pretty great. All right, let's do it.
Are we spinning turbo again?
Spin that wheel.
We got to, man. How are we doing on time? We doing all right?
We're good.
Great.
All right. This is a close one. Oh, it's going to be right on the line.
Oh, what is it?
We are going the White Ranger debut.
Ooh.
This was a big deal back in 94. And I think we touched on this in the Power Ranger episode where...
Yeah, give them a CliffsNotes version.
We'll just do a little. So Jason David Frank, who played Tommy Oliver, kind of wanted to get off Power Rangers, right?
Mm-hmm.
He felt like, okay, like I've established myself as the star, and Saban offered him his own show, which was VR Troopers. So Jason David Frank goes off, and he films the pilot for VR Troopers, which you can actually watch on YouTube. It's very interesting. And so they start season two, right? And there's no Tommy, and kids are crying. Kids are throwing fits. Parents are writing letters, and Saban realizes, okay, I just took the most popular guy off this show. I need to get him back. So the guy who is going to play the White Ranger originally gets swapped with Jason David Frank. He goes to VR Troopers. They bring Jason back to Power Rangers. And there's a two-part episode called The White Light.
Okay.
And this is episodes 17 and 18. So you can see season two went on for 16 episodes before they were like, okay.
So is there any White Ranger presence at all?
No, not until episode 17.
Okay, not even him in the mask, not knowing who.
No, nothing. Season two started with no Tommy on the show, and that's what the problem was.
Mm-hmm.
So the White Light, part one and part two is episodes 17 and 18, and it aired in, I want to say, October of 94.
Okay.
And, so it starts out, Kimberly, she's all excited. She got a letter in the mail from Tommy. Tommy's coming back to Angel Grove.
Thank God.
Okay. Coming back to save the show. And all of a sudden, Alpha and Zordon disappear from the command center, right? Command center shuts down. There's no power, nothing. The Rangers don't know what's going on. Billy goes to the command center and, you know, Billy being the smart one, magically finds a secret door to a chamber underneath the command center. And like,
where'd this come from?
And like in the show, he's like looking through a grate on the floor. And in the show, they give you a little glimpse of the boot and like the leg. And you can see it's white with the gold trim.
Ooh.
And you hear Zordon talking. He's like, Alpha, change the blah, 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 right? And Alpha's down there with his tools. And so, the episode goes on and it ends on a cliffhanger, right?
Like Frankenstein.
Right. So all the Rangers are back in the command center, right? And Alpha and Zordon are back. And they're like, Rangers, we're sorry for our secrecy and blah, blah, blah. And so a white light shines from the ceiling, and the Ranger ascends down, right? And he goes up to his clips, and it's slow motion, unclips the clips, goes to take the helmet off, and it cuts to a close-up of Kimberly's face.
Uh-huh.
And her eyes go wide, and then she faints. And the show ends, and it says, to be continued.
Oh, okay? Man.
And so the next episode, you had to wait a whole week. Okay,
yeah.
I was ecstatic. Okay, I mean, you pretty much already know it's going to be Tommy. But, I mean, there's a chance it might not be.
Yeah.
So the episode two, or part two, starts, and starts right where we left off, but it kind of rewinds, you know? So Kimberly's there looking.
Uh-huh.
Helmet comes off, and it's Tommy. And he's like, guess who's back? And then Kimberly faints, right? And everyone's clapping, and they're all happy. And he goes over to Kimberly and wakes her up, and Tommy's back.
Dang.
As the White Ranger.
I don't remember it happening that way.
To boost ratings for Power Rangers, because Saban was worried that people were going to stop watching because Jason David Frank left the show.
Yeah, crazy. So there were 16 episodes without a White Ranger, without Tommy.
Yes, just the original Green Ranger.
Back to the original five.
There was no Green Ranger because I believe that ended in season one with the green candle, right? Like there was a green candle that burned out. Tommy lost his powers, and that was their way of writing him off the show.
They ran out of footage of Green Ranger.
Right. And they wrote him off the show so he could go do VR Troopers.
Wow, crazy. Yeah. So, yeah, dude, like, obviously, I was one of those kids that was all about Green Ranger, all about Tommy. So to have him not missing from the show is like a huge hole in the cast, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, bringing him back makes total sense. And obviously, not only does it help the show, it helps the toy line.
Because
now you got a whole new Ranger.
Brand new Ranger.
You know, arguably everybody's favorite Ranger. So you can make toys of him.
Yeah.
He's got Zords. He has weapons, also known as Saba, the white
Saba,
tiger
dude,
sword.
Saba might trump Dragon Dagger.
Yeah.
He's very, very cool.
I mean, I know for a fact by Christmas 94, I had Saba.
Oh, I had Saba
I had
as well.
White Tiger Zord. Yep. I had the 8-inch Tommy. I had the small version Tommy. Automorphin White Ranger from the movie.
Something about the White Ranger.
Yeah.
The white just really pops. It's the cool.
Babyface. Now, were the bad guys starting to really dominate? Did Lord Zed have a couple episodes on the Rangers
where they
needed the support?
You know, when Zordon and Elf are gone, the Rangers don't know what to do. They're just like,
a couple episode build up, though, too, where the Rangers are getting their butts whipped?
I don't remember if there was a build up. I just remember the two-parter and them trying to, you know, fight off Zed and stuff and not having Zordon there and just struggling.
Wow.
Struggling, you know, because you got to beat him down before you can build him up.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Christmas 94 was a huge year for Power Rangers, obviously.
Yeah.
93 was like that first year where the toys were literally impossible to find.
Right.
94, it was getting a little bit easier, but they were
slightly.
But they were still the hottest toys on the planet.
And then that White Ranger Automorpher hits.
Yep. And all, you know,
good luck.
Yeah, all that White Ranger stuff. To this day, you know, the vintage 94 talking Saba sword in good shape.
$100
Yes,
easily.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's just an iconic toy. Like every kid in the 90s had one.
And Saban never made that mistake again. Tommy was in Power Rangers for the next 10 years or so?
Yeah.
It's like, you are never leaving.
Wow.
I do remember that Saba, that cat, because my younger brother had it.
Yeah.
And that's all I remember with that White Ranger toy. It was that cat that you guys were talking about, Saba.
Saba was cool because he always gave Tommy a little lip. He was a little sassy. You know? You're not driving the tires over right.
I like it.
Awesome stuff.
All right, we ready to spin?
Yeah,
spin
we're
that
ready.
Wheel. We are past the 1,994 second mark.
Oh,
I don't know what that means.
I don't
1994
either.
Would be 33 minutes. So
all right, guys.
Oh.
We're a few minutes past that.
Okay, what we got?
This one's a doozy right here. We are talking Michael Jordan, baby. 1994.
When you said Michael Jordan, I literally had to look a few things up because I'm like, 94, Jordan's not even in the NBA, right?
Right.
Right.
Okay, I have some things to say.
But he's still Michael Jordan.
Right, well, that's
Space Jam.
He starts filming in 94.
He starts filming, yeah.
So he's probably playing a lot of baseball.
Yes.
Lots of
baseball. So that's why I wanted to bring it up, because everybody remembers Michael Jordan with the Chicago Bulls.
Yes.
He wins three championships in the early 90s, just dominant, best basketball player. Arguably the most famous athlete on the planet. I mean,
yes.
I don't even think it's an argument.
I no.
I mean, the Nike commercials.
Who are you going to debate?
He was
Gatorade, baby.
Yeah. I mean, Hanes.
Hanes, yeah.
Dude, he was all over Hanes.
Jordan was everywhere, and he was the best basketball player. He was doing commercials with Bugs Bunny for Super Bowls that had the crossover, which led to Space Jam prior to this. But he shocks the NBA in the end of 93. The 93-94 NBA season is getting ready to get started, and Jordan, I think his dad got murdered, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what, basketball is just not for me.
He couldn't do it. He didn't want to do it without his dad.
Man, I'm going to go play baseball.
Yep.
So, but we didn't know that right away, so he just retired. So you're watching basketball without Jordan in the end of 93. And then February 94, I can picture the Sports Center, like, breaking news. Michael Jordan agrees to contract with the Chicago White Sox. And I'm like, wait, Chicago White Sox? That's a baseball team. That is a Major League baseball team.
Baby. Yeah.
What the heck is going on here? So, yeah, I mean, Michael Jordan... You never saw more minor league baseball coverage on ESPN.
Oh, no. Unbelievable.
For the year
right?
of 94. Every day, what you saw Jordan's highlights as a baseball player.
Yeah.
Which is, it was weird at first.
Yeah.
Very
so
weird.
If it was like modern, like if it was happening nowadays, there would be a channel devoted 24/7 to his every movement.
Absolutely.
I mean, ESPN spent a lot of time talking about Michael Jordan. It was insane.
Right.
Yeah, the whole year was just like Jordan and baseball. And then, of course, they're comparing it to the NBA. But, I mean, without Jordan retiring from the NBA, he probably doesn't get to film Space Jam.
Right.
Space Jam probably doesn't exist. It just continues to be a series of commercials because he films that in 90, starts filming it in 94 and then across 95 before it finally came out. But that's why I want to touch on it, because as a kid, you could not watch TV without seeing Michael Jordan on it as a baseball player. And
so he spent 2 years away.
Well, so he retired in October of 93, and he came back in March of 95, I believe it was.
Okay.
Because he missed the entire 93-94 season, but he was there for them to win the 93-94,
they won. They beat the Phoenix Suns.
No, the Rockets won in 94.
94-95.
That was the Rockets?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
93-94.
Didn't the Rockets win back-to-back?
I think so.
They won two.
I thought they won
94-95.
While Jordan
was away, the Rockets won two in a row.
That's why I thought they won 93-94.
I'm pretty sure 93-94 because I remember.
The Bulls had the best regular season record.
That was the year that I was devoted because the Phoenix Suns was my team. Charles Barkley was my dude.
Dan Marley.
Right? Yeah. Charles Barkley was such my dude that when I was a kid at Blockbuster. Remember back in the day when you were at Blockbuster as a kid? If you wanted to rent stuff and your parents weren't with you, like they were in the car, you had to give them a password. You guys remember this?
Yeah, yes. I do, yes.
So my password at Blockbuster was Barkley.
Barkley, baby!
Charles Barkley. I loved him so much. My password was Barkley. But looking back, it was kind of embarrassing because every time I'd have to rent something, they're like, what's your password? And I'd be like, Barkley. It's Barkley.
So what that we
but anyways, hear? Yeah, I remember because that was the 1 year Charles got all the way. I was so excited, and then Jordan beats him, and I was like, oh, geez.
I think that was 92-93.
Okay, maybe.
That was 92-93, yeah. The Suns, Bulls was 92-93. 93-94 was Knicks, Rockets. Mm.
Yeah,
and then
94 finals champion was the Rockets.
And then it was like Rockets and Magic, right?
Rockets and Magic. Yep. And then Jordan was back in March of 95.
Gotcha.
Jordan's like, I've had enough of y'all.
So Jordan, three-peats, right?
Yep.
Wins three in a row, leaves, allows Houston to win a couple.
Yep.
Homeboy comes back, wins three more.
Yep.
Never misses a beat.
No, not at all.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, to be away that long and come back like you never left.
Yep.
And the Bulls were still good without him.
Yeah,
like,
they were.
They had like the second best record in the NBA.
Scotty held it down
without him, but just couldn't get that those championship. You need that guy in the NBA that's going to take you to the next level, and
he was that guy.
NBA changed there, and then ironically, Jordan goes to baseball, playing minor league baseball. He almost plays major league baseball because I think it was late in the '94 baseball season when major league baseball shut down for a strike, canceled the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Before they canceled the World Series, they were talking about having scab players come up. So, like, the September, every year in Major League Baseball, in September, they have the call. So the roster goes from 25 to 40 guys. They bring the minor league guys up just to see what you got, give them some experience towards the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan would have been in that.
Yeah.
Had the baseball season continued, he almost was a Chicago White Sox. Could have been playing in the playoffs, but they canceled the World Series, and Jordan never makes it to Major League Baseball.
Wild. Wild story. Crazy that it happened, right?
Yeah.
Just a testament to what kind of athlete this dude was, right?
And to bring it back around to trade shows, I remember trying to hunt the Upper Deck Michael Jordan baseball, which I guess would be his rookie card for baseball.
So what, they threw his minor league card in like the pro set?
Yeah. He had Upper Deck.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, right?
For sure. Birmingham Barons.
The Barons.
Wild.
And I think he did play a little bit for the Charlotte team, which was like, I think the Barons were the AA team.
I think so, yeah.
And then the AAA team was like the Charlotte Knights, maybe?
Probably.
I don't know why I would know that. And then you'd go to the White Sox from there, I believe.
Wow.
So I think he did play a little bit in Charlotte, but Birmingham is where he was spent most of his baseball days.
What can't Michael Jordan do?
I don't know, man. In 94, he did it all. I was wearing my Hanes t-shirt, drinking Gatorade, going
for
to McDonald's.
Real. It's like, Mom, I need some more Hanes
Nikes
t-shirts.
On your feet.
No, that was back when Gatorade was in a glass bottle. Remember that?
Got to
be careful. Don't chip your tooth.
Dude,
chugging it too fast.
It hit different in the glass bottle, I'm telling you.
It did.
You couldn't go a commercial break without seeing Michael Jordan.
No,
commercial.
He was all over that TV.
Yeah. Even when he was playing baseball, he was still everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. He was raking in that money.
Spin that wheel.
All right, let's spin this.
Well, we got three left?
We got three left.
Let's do it. I can remember a couple of them.
All right.
What we got?
We have Jim Carrey movies of 1994.
All righty then.
The box office king of 94. Honestly.
All right, let me set the stage. This is because this is unreal, right? So yeah. In 1 year span, from January 94 to December 94, these three movies come out. Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber. All in the same year.
It's nuts.
All number one movies in the world, right?
Yeah.
All in one calendar year. I looked these facts up. And,
has anyone done that since?
The Rock did it in 2013.
Of course, yeah. The Rock.
But it was like in G.I. Joe. Yeah. It was all movies that like were part of franchises.
Like established names.
Established names. This is this 94 Jim Carrey list isn't. Yeah. None of these are anything.
Made him a superstar.
Ace Ventura, no one knows what this is.
No.
And Ace Ventura would not work with any other human on Earth than Jim Carrey.
No.
Just wouldn't.
No.
The Mask was literally written for Jim Carrey. Dude, so that's, you know what I mean? And then Dumb and Dumber, I was reading about that film. That movie was in development hell for years.
Yeah,
there was like so many actors attached and they couldn't get it off the ground. They couldn't get it made until Jim Carrey comes along and here's your Lloyd Christmas, right? It's like unbelievable the amount of talent this guy like redefined comedy. I mean I think anyone like our age that grew up in the 90s, you look back and like to this day I'm like, dude, you cannot touch these movies.
You cannot touch Jim Carrey.
He is the absolute best.
I loved those movies. Of the three, which one was your guys' favorite?
I gotta go Dumb and Dumber for me. I love Dumb and Dumber, but I mean you can't go wrong with either,
honestly. For me, Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
I remember being in a movie
theater.
Dan
Marino.
I remember being in a movie theater. So what? That's nice. So I'm 12.
Yep.
And like literally falling out of my chair. I'm laughing so hard. Like at multiple points through this movie. And like that's prior to Ace Ventura. Jim Carrey is a staple on TV.
Yeah,
like in Living Color. Fire Marshal Bill.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Fire Marshal Bill, that character was so popular. I can remember and I wish I would have bought this when I saw it. I can remember being a little kid in Target and walking by the clothes rack, and there's an all-over print T-shirt of Fire Marshal Bill.
Oh,
it's like,
man.
Let me tell you something. And it's just Fire Marshal Bill's entire face on the shirt.
That's awesome.
It's like,
what's that shirt be worth now?
Oh, insane amounts of money. But you could tell from In Living Color, you're like, this guy is so charismatic.
Yeah, he's
a star. He takes over the screen, and he just needed an opportunity. And once he got it, it was boom.
He took the ball
and he
ran
with it. Three number one movies in a year? Insane.
Love them all. My favorite out of all three of those movies, I mean, Dumb and Dumber and Ace Ventura are my favorite two. Probably lean towards Ace Ventura slightly.
Yeah.
But my favorite scene out of all of them, though, is from Dumb and Dumber. Mm-hmm. It's when they get pulled over by the cop who's Harlan Williams.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he drinks the pee jug. And I'll do this to this day. If I drink something that I'm like, and he does this little click, I'll still, it holds up. 39-year-old me, I'll take a sip of something and just be like, and it's just from that scene. And it just hilarious to me still holds up. And
so
I mean, there's
many
so many great scenes and lines and things. And all of them, but The Mask got a sequel. Dumb and Dumber much later. Very terrible. But Ace Ventura was like immediate sequel.
Yeah, it really was, because Ace Ventura Pet Detective 2 is like a year later.
Yeah.
95, it's out.
Yeah, and the Mask was the only one that had like toys and a video game.
And a cartoon.
And a cartoon.
I wanted to bring it back to toys. I didn't want to touch on the Mask toys. Hasbro made a line of them in 1994.
Yep.
Those toys are sweet, man.
They are very cool.
They are cool. I've got a few of them at home. I don't collect the whole line. I've got the... it's almost like an automorphin mask figure, where it's like Stanley Ipkiss's head, and you lift his arm, and it turns the mask's head. He's got that, the banana yellow suit, the zoot suit looking great.
Suit.
Got that little Milo dog. We put the mask on the dog.
Dude,
there was a
mask
sequel. Milo got the sequel.
There's a son of mask.
It was Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah, those don't count. Yeah. Jim Carrey's
no, we don't
not
count.
Even
if he's not in it, it doesn't count.
Yeah. But just crazy, the amount, and so many quotable lines from all these movies.
Yes.
Like Ace Ventura has like a million of them. The Mask has a million of them. It's just crazy, right?
Oh, my God. There was a little kid. It was a kid within the last year that was doing the butt talking thing. And I was, classic Ace. That comes from Ace. This kid probably has no idea where that comes from. Probably saw some YouTube or TikTok video.
Dude, the butt talking changed
the
world.
The butt talking Jim Carrey brought it to us in 94.
Yeah. I mean, if you're having a bad day and you need to smile, you just put on Ace Ventura, man.
Within one minute,
you're going to be rolling on the floor. It's just nonstop. There's some questionable things by modern standards.
Yeah.
You know?
It was a different time back then.
It's a different time. But if you just take it at its comedic value and the performance of the actor, dude, Jim Carrey, untouchable. Yeah. That's why in recent years, him playing Robotnik in Sonic, I feel like that first Sonic movie, when I saw it, I'm like, man, that's like Jim Carrey being
Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, my kids watch it, and they're like, this guy's great. So it's kind of hard to show them some of those movies now because there are a lot.
They're not really
but
appropriate.
But there are some you can show them, and certain scenes you can show them.
Yeah.
Even they, you know, you could be 6 years old, and you watch
some
Ace Ventura or Jim Carrey at his comedic best. You're going to be dying laughing.
Right. Mm. I don't even know if we should have been watching those movies back in 94, but, you know, we did.
Well, you know, we got Snowflake.
Right. All right, we ready to spin? We got two left.
Yeah, let's do it. Two more. What are they? I don't even know.
They're the...
Let's see. What we got?
We got Donkey Kong Country.
Ooh.
On the Super Nintendo Entertainment System.
All right, well, let's go.
All right, Donkey Kong Country. This was developed by Rare.
Yeah.
Yes, and published by Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Came out in 1994, and this game, it was kind of groundbreaking, right? Because you look at this game, and visually, it was so different.
Yeah.
Rare found a way to make 3D models of all these characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And through some kind of, like, new compression technique that they developed, they were able to render the 3D models into the regular sprites for Nintendo, but, like, with little quality loss.
Yeah.
So the game just looks so ahead of its time. With the graphics and the music, and I guess technically it's considered a reboot of the Donkey Kong franchise,
really?
Which was pretty dead and dormant by this time.
So you bringing up Donkey Kong Country made me realize, so I was a Sega kid, right?
Yeah.
I had Sega Genesis.
Same.
Did not have a Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Never once, you know, felt bad about it. I was fine with my Sega until.
Until, man.
Until this day that what. So when did this game come out? September 94, you say?
Either September or October. Yeah, somewhere around there.
Walking in Target.
Yeah.
Taylor Target, end cap, where you can demo video games, is Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong Country's on it.
Oh,
and I walk
man.
Up to it, and I start playing it, and I was like, oh.
Dude.
I'm like, this is the future.
Dude, it was.
Visually blew my... You cannot understate it. There was no game that looked
there
that
wasn't.
Good ever.
No, it, wasn't.
It was unbelievable.
It was a 2D game.
And in that moment,
man.
I was like, I think I want a Super Nintendo now.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get one. I never had a Super Nintendo. But I was so damn jealous, man. So
Dude.
Jealous. That game looked so good. It was so fun to play. I wanted to sit in Target all day long.
My only note here. It's
Let's
so
hear it.
Funny you say that. For Donkey Kong, I was like, played it for the first time as an adult.
Okay.
However, as a kid in 1994, same as you, Keith, never wanted a Super Nintendo. The commercials and then playing a demo of it made me want a Super Nintendo.
That's all you needed was
like,
1 minute of playing
that
game.
It was the greatest game
ever. It was
ever.
Unbelievable.
And you just, and then like what, years later, like N64 kind of has their version of it, which felt more like an N64 game. But we're talking for Super Nintendo.
It was a platformer,
I remember seeing it on the end cap, like you were saying, and thinking it was like Sega CD game.
Yeah.
Because that was brand new, like, at the time. I think that came out the year prior, but it's like, oh, I have my Sega Genesis. I don't want this Sega CD crap. But it looked like...
It looked like it.
It looked
next level. It did not look 16-bit or
insane.
That it was something we would be playing. It was crazy.
Rare was ahead of their game, and that's kind of what caused Nintendo to be like, okay, Rare knows what they're doing. Nintendo bought a lot of stock into Rare, and Rare became, like, a staple developer for them.
Yeah, you know, I guess I always knew Rare developed it. Mm-hmm. I can remember that. So Nintendo really didn't have anything to do with that
Nothing
game.
To do with it. They gave Rare a chance.
And for it to be, obviously, if it's visually stunning, but it sucks gameplay-wise, we're not talking about it.
No.
But not only does it look good, it plays good.
And it sounds good.
Yeah, dude. Unbelievable, man.
It was a hat trick.
And Donkey Kong before that, I mean, Donkey Kong in the 80s is what? It's like you get Mario climbing the levels.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong's like a bad guy. Like,
yeah.
And this is totally different. This is more like in taking the Super Mario concept of you're going through levels, Sonic concept, you're going through levels. And you're Donkey Kong, like throwing barrels to your point, Joe. Like,
we just recently, in the last couple of weeks, we bought my son Windsor, we bought him Donkey Kong something for Switch. There's a new Donkey Kong Country.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
It's Donkey Kong Country for Switch.
I have to look into that.
Yeah, and they got the Grandpa Donkey Kong.
And
the little, they're all there.
That's
they're
awesome.
All there. I'm like, man, Donkey Kong Country still going strong.
It's still a very strong IP for Nintendo.
Yeah,
and
awesome.
I think Donkey Kong Country was the third highest-selling game on the Super Nintendo of all time.
I believe it. Wow.
Had to just be behind a couple Mario games if I had to guess.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
All right. We got one left.
No need to spin. We're talking Sonic and Knuckles.
Okay.
Back-to-back video games.
Yep, so flip side to that. We've talked about the world of Super Nintendo. Sega Genesis,
So, yeah, Sonic and Knuckles, I believe this came out October 94 as well.
Okay.
Because it was just like Sonic 3, right?
Well, that's what I was going to talk about. Yeah. A little fun fact, if you guys may or may not know. So when they were developing the next Sonic sequel, Sonic and Knuckles and Sonic 3 was one game.
Okay.
And it was being developed as one game. And then I know they hit some time constraints and then like budget started to play a factor. So Sega had to split it. And they released Sonic and Knuckles first. And that's why it has that unique adapter on top. And so later on when they released Sonic 3, that's why it was designed that way. So you could plug in Sonic 3 into Sonic and Knuckles and play the game in its true form the way that it was supposed to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Sonic and Knuckles, if you didn't have a game on top of it, it was still a game you could play, right? Or no?
I want to say it was.
Yeah,
you
could.
Yeah.
Because I rented Sonic and Knuckles. And to me, it just felt like, oh, it's just like the new Sonic. It's just a new Sonic game. This Knuckles guy is
very,
cool.
Very similar to Sonic 3. I mean, but, for a reason, because it was Sonic 3.
I see. Yeah. But, now, I mean, I remember, honestly, just plugging games into the top of it. Right?
And then you get that screen. This is not compatible. It'd be Sonic tapping his foot or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, for some reason, I always associate Sonic and Knuckles with the Aladdin video game. Okay. I must have rented them like around the same time.
Yeah, probably. Well, I feel like Aladdin's 93.
Yeah, it might have come out the year before. But I feel like I rented them around the same time or whatever and played it. And then I remember buying Aladdin and never buying Sonic and Knuckles. Okay. And then years later wishing, I mean, Aladdin was a sweet game, but
it was very sweet.
Wishing that I had bought Sonic and Knuckles because Knuckles was cool.
Dude, he was very cool. And I was first introduced to Knuckles in the comic books. I don't know if you guys ever...
You had the comics
before? I had Sonic comic books as a kid, yeah.
Well, yeah. Knuckles, I mean, we've talked about it a million times. It's like every IP has the one character that's got the edge, that's made bad becomes good, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tommy. And that's what Knuckles is, right?
Dude, he kind
of starts off as him and Sonic are butting heads at first. You know, you think he's an evil dude, and then over time they learn each other's backstory and they realize, oh, we should probably not be fighting each other, we should be fighting together.
Right.
So by the end, Sonic's, you know, a good guy, but the character himself, so cool, right?
I mean, very cool.
He's like red version of Sonic, got the giant fists,
dude,
can punch everything,
he's got the spikes on the knuckles.
He's an echidna, which I still don't know what that is, but that's what
know.
He is.
It's Sonic 2, they kind of explain that, don't they? But I still don't know.
Oh, in the movie, in the modern
movie. I think it's like a really cute looking animal. Then you look at Knuckles and you're like, what's going on here? Yeah,
Sonic
cool.
and Knuckles.
Very cool game.
Awesome game, yeah. We were spoiled, man. 1994, if you had a Super Nintendo or a Sega Genesis,
dude,
you had unlimited options of cool stuff to play,
to
right?
The video store we go.
Seriously.
And I still feel like barely scratched the surface.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So
and
much
like
more.
Like, my 94, I remember, like, just... That was, like, the year where it's, like, early in the year. If I was in the house, it was toys and video games, but outside... I played so many sports in 94.
Yes,
like,
sir.
That's just barely scratching the surface.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what a year.
We can always come back. We can have 94 part two. Or
Revisited.
The reboot.
Speaking of Revisited, next week we're going to be revisiting a previous podcast. We're not going to spin the wheel, but we are going to put a spin on it.
We are. So we're testing out a new concept we came up with. So we had so much fun talking about WWF LJNs a few episodes ago, right, guys?
Yes.
And we got a lot of good feedback. We've had a lot of listens on that podcast.
It's one of our most listened episodes.
It's a very popular podcast. And since we kind of ran through the whole line, we're like, well, how can we talk about LJNs in a different way?
Yeah.
And we came up with this idea. So are we calling it the Time Blaster Toys Bodacious Bracket Tournament? Is that what it's being called?
I'm down.
Or the TBT-BBT for short. So what we're going to do is a single elimination eight-man tournament. We are going to randomly pick eight LJNs, and we're going to have them battle one-on-one. We're going to debate. There's three of us. Majority's going to rule. We're going to see who advances. And of these eight, there's going to be one winner, right?
One winner.
The inaugural winner of the TBT-BBT tournament. I'm excited to talk LJNs, and hopefully this concept ends up working and we can go, you know, beyond LJNs and do all sorts of toy lines.
Once we get our winner, we can always come back, do it again, and he can defend the title.
Well, yeah, there's enough to where we could easily do eight tournaments.
Absolutely.
And then we could do a tournament with the eight champions.
We have the undisputed.
The ultimate survivor.
It could be Brian Blair.
Dude,
versus
it could
Miss
be
Liz
slick.
Next week.
Yeah, tune in, find out what we're going through. For our wrestling fans out there, you're going to love it.
I did come up with a couple ideas, guys. next week. It won't be all wrestling. I have two undercard matches that are outside of wrestling that we're going to sprinkle in throughout the tournament.
Okay.
So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're looking forward to it.
Those are surprises for you guys.
They're dark matches.
Very excited. Well, thanks for listening to this week's episode. Leave your review, like, subscribe. If you're leaving reviews, not on Apple, but on another platform, send them over to the Facebook or the Instagram for Time Blaster Toys, or even hit up at RetroKO or myself at Matthew_Priest. And we'll be happy to make sure they get read on the podcast. And then you can get your goodies. Mm-hmm. Like, who was the fellow whose review we read earlier?
N. Cargill.
Just like that. So thanks a lot for the review, N. Cargill. And like, subscribe, send your reviews over, and we'll catch you guys later on down the trail.
See you guys. I'm going to make you feel. Yo, DJ, spin that wheel.